Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
So, welcome to the Midweek Takeaway, and welcome, Leon, from Jubilee Metals. How are you doing?
Yeah. I'm doing well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you again for the opportunity to have a chat.
Yeah, I'm going to pass you straight over to Charles, who's written an article, and he's going to quiz you on some of the details of this deal and what's happening in Zambia.
100%, no problem, thanks. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Leo, how are you? Well, do you know what? I think Kev just asked, so we'll jump straight into it. Let's go for the rationale for disposal. So basically, we've got this transaction structure, $87 to $90 million. Purchase consideration, so $25 million in cash, comprising of $50 million advance and $10 million at completion, $50 million in deferred payments over 4 years, and then $12 to $15 million in royalty payments. A significant amount of capital. And basically, the question is this enough money for the South African assets to be sold? I mean, I've read through the rationale for the disposal in the circular, but in your own words, why are we getting out of South Africa and focusing solely on Zambia?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of reasons, Charles. Maybe just to take a step back and explain what is South Africa. I think that probably is the first part to make sure there's an understanding of what is South Africa before one looks at what is the value that that business should attract. And if you look at South Africa and where we started this company back in 2014 with our actual first contract into processing of waste products, what we established in South Africa is quite novel. You know, we don't really have peers in this space we've created. And what we've got in South Africa is a pure processing company, a company who takes other people's materials that they undervalue or don't value at all or didn't used to value in the past, and we extract from that material value. We started life in the platinum group metal space, where we took what is chrome miners who mine chrome reef, extract chrome, and then there are traces of PGMs in that reef. And we then focused on extracting that PGMs or platinum group metals from that chrome waste. It migrated into more and more chrome focus, because the reality of the business was that in the absence of chrome ore, there would be no PGM traces to recover. So chrome's viability is fundamental to that business being viable. It's what drove us into the space of chrome, where we've set many new bars in chrome recovery to go after that chrome fractions that the chrome industry had assumed was either too fine, too low grade to recover, and successfully implemented processes to recover that portion of chrome. It ensured a stronger viability of the owners of the reef to continue mining, continue producing chrome, and allowing us to recover the traces of PGMs that remained. We then migrated further, where all of this was done on a typical toll processing arrangement, where we process their ore, we return to them the chrome we recovered, and we focus on making our earnings out of the PGMs. And we started migrating to having far more chrome market focus, because there was no growth left in the tolling side alone. And we went into the business to secure direct access, partnering with chrome operators to get a percentage of chrome earnings from the technologies and the process techniques we deployed to ensure a stronger viable model. So it was a bit of a quid pro quo, where we're getting access to chrome and offering access to PGM earnings to ensure fundamentally number one priority was that the chrome ore owners or reef owners or mine owners remain viable. So when you look at our company, we have a class set, if you look at our balance sheet, made up of plant and equipment, know-how, which would be a significant portion of our balance sheet, because that's really what distinguished Jubilee from others in the processing of chrome. And then, of course, our PGM side, where we have access to historical PGM tails that we had acquired over time. That really is the business. So as it grew to a point in South Africa, the business very successfully, because of us breaking down barriers of chrome ores that were disregarded by the industry or by the owners of those reefs, we grew to a point where it offered very limited further growth within that space. And the fundamental anchor that de-risks that business is security of ROM, run of mine, security of ore. And that is the one missing link the South African business had. So we as a board had a very simple decision to make. Either we invest significantly into acquiring chrome mines in South Africa, or we look at securing full value for a processing business that we had created. The second part was a bit of a challenge because there's no such other company
pressure. Yeah.
That exists. There's no reference of a processing company being sold as such, because normally mining companies value you on your resource base. And the processing firm as it is a company based on short, medium-term contracts. So you don't have a 15-year resource-based life that offers you your security of earnings. So within a processing space, you have a reality of either stay as you are, face the reality of shrinking margins driven by cost squeeze, both from mining the reef and selling of that reef, in a market that's physically traded, not platform traded through London Stock Exchange or Metal Exchange, rather. It's dominated by China, and therefore the chrome price is often set by China, not through some exchange. So taking those risks into context and within the South African space where your cost base of electricity is escalating in multiples of inflation, one has to look at what would such capital return offer you in South Africa to buy or pursue, even if they were available, such chrome mines. And that really is a decision one has to look at when you then look at your question, the value that's being offered, before we get into, you know, what do we believe such a cash can unlock in an industry such as copper. If you look at the value, one has to then say, well, as a private entity you're selling, no peer reference, set yourself a target of at least, it might be a stretch target, but set yourself a target of securing the full net asset value of your company.
Mm.
And on top of that, add back onto that any debt that company might have, so that you then target that as a value for a South African business, so that you actually secure full value on a significant multiple of your earnings of that company, even if you take in certain, you know, fluctuations in commodity prices. And that really was the rationale of the selling part. Of the reinvesting part, the rationale is, of course, very different. The rationale for the reinvestment side is to go into a metal with strong fundamentals, publicly well-researched, many documents available, analysts in the copper space, a metal that is widely traded, driven by supply and demand fundamentals through the various exchanges it is sold and traded on. A metal that has no specific technology reliance, such as platinum group metals. Platinum group metals fundamentally is linked to the technology required to take gases out of your internal combustion engine in the exhaust system.
Mm.
That's fundamental, its majority of its use. And therefore, its continued future demand is linked to that single use beyond some other areas. But that's the major one.
Versus copper,
which is not linked to whether you have a battery car or whether you have a EV, a hybrid, or an internal combustion engine. It's for if you need electricity conducted anywhere, whether it's in your house appliances or whether it's in your motor vehicle, you need copper. And therefore, copper is linked to world and world economics and demand. It's far simpler investment theory. And that's why it attracts such stronger multiples in the market. And it's also the reason why we felt that that would be a stronger offering for our capital investment play.
To summarize, basically, you had these strategic options to acquire more chrome mines, which required that significant capital investment, for which you would have had to raise capital at the share price that we have, non-viable, or to continue as a pure processor, but deal with that margin pressure constantly. The fact that you've got to the point where you feel like you've maxed out what you can do, or to sell the operations that you have and pivot to copper with this, you know, say $87 to $90 million. And then we can talk about the financial impact, the debt to equity ratio, or the fact the purchaser, you know, assuming those South African facilities. But if you are pivoting to copper, and to be honest, I mean, we've done the justification part already. I think we've got to the point now where it's better to talk about the future. You've got this three pillar copper strategy, integrating the mine to metal. So that's the Sable refinery, Munkoyo, and Project G, the third party processing. So that's Roan, And then the surface stockpiles and the tailings, so that's the last large waste tailings dump. So I think if we take them one by one, so Sable Refinery, Moncayo and Project G, that first
Yes.
pillar, what's the strategy over the next 12 months?
Sure. Exactly, Charles. You just summarized it accurately. I mean, maybe just to hover on a well-trodden road is, because people often look at what have we achieved so far in copper. We've missed targets, we've missed timelines in copper. That's true. What mistakes have we made? How are we addressing that? Or are we just going to repeat the same mistakes again in copper? And you're quite right. If you look at what we now are pursuing compared to what we were when we entered the copper space, entered Zambia as a new jurisdiction, what we were was a single integrated approach, where every single component of our projects integrated into a single solution, a single processing, concentrating up into a single refining strategy, centralized refining, etc. What that showed to be flawed is the infrastructure challenges within the country. You cannot build out your company reliant on a single area, whether it has electricity or road infrastructure, or whatever it might be, or water, for your strategy to succeed. But what we are now taking forward is actually a complete diversification. It's taking the best out of South Africa, where it's a pure toll processor. Exactly as you said, we, or not a toll processor, but we buy in run of mine, we process, make a product, and we sell it for a margin. That's the simplicity of the one business. The second one that you just touched on, which we can discuss, is where we take mining and we integrate it all the way into refining and metal. So true mine to metals, fully integrated project, totally unrelated from whether you are successful or not with your processing of run of mine and making a product. Different regions, different sources of power, different sources of infrastructure reliance between the two infrastructures. You are correct. We went ahead and acquired the rights to two mining on operations, and maybe mining is overstated because we're speaking about exceptionally shallow reefs. You know, you're hitting reef from 5 meters down. Yeah. So it's you know, it's like advanced gardening, as one manager used to refer to. Where Moncoy pits of 9 pits have been opened, each pit hitting reef. Drilling program happening at the moment showing that actually the continuity of the reef suggests mega pits rather than satellite pits that it offers. Immediately on the back of that, looking at acquiring property around Mongwe to offer extended life of this quality potential reef that is being found in that area. The second one, Project G, as you refer to, very similar to Mongwe, just in a different direction. The one is roughly 48 kilometers away from the refinery. The other is roughly about 65 kilometers away, maybe up to 70 kilometers, depending which road you take. Both open pit, both extremely shallow. There is many more such opportunities in the area. Mongwe, which is small scale, which is maybe the wrong word used in Zambian law, small scale, meaning it's smaller than 700 hectares, which is particularly large. And it therefore shows you that beyond Mongkoi, there are many more Mongkois within the Mongkoi area or the Mongkoi district. And therefore, we've now shown that ability. We've shown our processing team has shown how to recover that material. We've mined a single pit only to bring it into our refinery to ensure its recoverability, its plating into copper cathode, high quality. And we now also, as we've explained to the market, what this strategy requires for that district is a dedicated on-site upgrading facility. It's not as complicated as a full processing facility. It's an upgrade facility. Because in Moncoy, we mine two reefs, as no doubt Grosvenor will be, as no doubt Project G might be going forward, where these properties offer you the ability to mine a high-grade seam and through slight more dilution, a lower-grade seam as well. It's the lower-grade seam that requires upgrading on-site, where we upgraded to north of 4.5% copper before we bring it into the refinery to plate. It's not a particularly large capital outlay. It's why the capital that we've adjusted towards is relatively low, because you're only upgrading the reef. You're not recovering it to a copper product. You're simply upgrading the reef prior to refining. That strategy allows us to build out many more Mongkois. And if you think of Mongkoi acquiring for roughly $1.5 million, and we've already produced copper that is probably 40 times the value of that amount we paid in just getting copper in, processing it through. We have north of 1.5 million tons of stock on surface at Moncoy already of this low grade org. It gives you a sense of how quickly one can move and how cheaply one can expand your portfolio of these opportunities in Zambia. The key that you need to unlock that opportunity is you've got a refinery. You've got all the infrastructure associated with having that refinery. So it's not a capital project that is a mine, an upgrade facility, and a refinery. The refinery is done. We're simply expanding it. And that's the logic of that of the business that's being installed.
And then, I mean, in terms of if you have, like we say, $90 million and Moncloa costs so little, you've got the capital now to go buy several more to get to
Oh,
zero.
absolutely, Charles. I mean, if you look at the, you know, if you look at the value of the South African business that's being the cash that's released from that sale, it's well in excess of total capital requirement for the Zambian company to complete all of its projects, not just Mogoye and Project G and Roan upgrade and Sable upgrade, but the full ambit of its project pipeline is a fraction of the cash that
And
this sale releases.
should we be expecting a share buyback over the next kind of 12 months?
Well, what we look at as a group is that whatever you do with a share buyback or dividends or whatever strategy you deploy to give back to shareholders, as long as it's sustainable, it's not a once-off flash in the pan kind of event. And you're quite right. If the cash coming in exceeds the capital outlay required, you get to a point faster where that can happen. And that's what the sale does. It accelerates that position to at what point do you arrive at where you actually now are able to, especially, I mean, look at where the share prices are hovering. It's so opportune to look at those potential strategies in
Yeah,
Jubilee.
I just think Jubilee has suffered in the past from being a highly liquid stock. So when funds need to liquidate for whatever reason, as they do, you are one of the ones that get hit by that. So having a share buyback in process, especially when the share price is so low, just seems to make logical sense. You get to a point where, the cash, the $90 million coming in from the sale of South African facilities almost covers the market capitalization of a company and assigns zero enterprise value to the Zambian assets, which is clearly ridiculous. The opportunity, to my mind anyway, is quite strong. In terms of third-party processing, so the Roan concentrator, I think we're at 384 tons of copper per month as of July. What's the plan for Roan over the next year?
To be honest, it's taking small steps on Roan. Roan's capacity is far greater than 384 tons of copper per month. I mean,
I'd hope so.
it's far, far greater than that, Roan. So our approach as a board and as management is small steps. It's basically repeatability now. So repeat that performance for a couple of months before you take the next step up. With Roan, because it's Roan is got such flexible opportunities, offers such flexibility in processing. There's so many different types of materials you can pursue to process at Roan. We have so many companies approaching us to say, well, can they possibly add another component so that we can also look at this component of ore, that component of ore, people understanding that we are processing materials exactly as in South Africa. We are processing materials people had thought were just too complicated. It just had too many combinations of coppers in it to processing, and Roan's doing it. It's doing it. Yes, it took time. Fact, it took a time to overcome the infrastructure issues thrown at it, to use that opportunity to restructure Roan as an independent operator, give it more flexibility, to give it its independence of any other component of our company. And they absolutely. So we will be running Roan on its current recipe for a couple of months before we look at now where do we step it up to? Because Roan's got, you know, many components to it. If you add them all up, Roan can exceed in a year alone. Roan will exceed comfortably 10,000 tons alone, Roan. But we'll get there in time as we now repeatability is the game. De-risking is the game for us. And, you know, if we, as we've alluded to in our updates, if you add all the potential projects we are currently running, you still comfortably achieve our aspirational goals in copper.
When we say aspirational goals in copper, can we talk a US dollar amount? I mean, where would you like to be a couple of years from now in terms of revenue?
Well, I suppose in copper, you need to be relevant. And that's something we've always discussed as Jubilee. To be relevant in copper, you need to exceed 25, 30,000 tons of copper a year. You want to get to that relevance factor. Relevance factor means that there's so many potential other knock-on effects. You get better terms, you get better lending terms for your working capital, you can negotiate better supply agreements from your suppliers. There's so much of it. Relevance also puts you on a different platform within the stature of the country that you're in. So that would be a goal that I think as a company, we've always said we're chasing down to get there. And what this does, being pure copper, it attracts different copper opportunities to us as a pure copper play. We're not confusing companies who talk to us, whether we are a chrome company or a trace PGM recovery company, or are we a copper company, or are we just a metallurgical services company for going forward?
Well, I think if you're looking 25,000 tons of copper, I think we're at 9,600 per metric ton at the moment. So $240 million. I mean, you look at revenue. I can't put those words in your mouth, but basically, you know, doing the math at the top of your head, and then you look at the market cap at the moment, I mean, the opportunity is immense if we can deliver it. But then we also have these large waste tailings dumps. So 240 million tons of resource.
Yep.
Some of that lower grade tailings have been sold for cash.
Yes.
But I guess the question is, I mean, the modular processing units, we first started talking about this, I think, a couple of years ago now, and that deal with IRH.
Yes.
I think they weren't, I mean, my interpretation of it, I'm not sure whether you can comment on it or not, but my interpretation is they weren't prepared to guarantee they were going to move quickly on it. Seems to be the view of the market, hence why you walked away.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, you know, sometimes in life, your partner and you don't have the same immediate strategy, and it only comes out in time once the detail is being, you know, nailed down on how you're implementing, how fast you're implementing, at what scale are you implementing, when you realize that strategies differ, whether you have a strategy to keep it on, keep ownership for potential future valuation or future address, or are you doing it because you really want to extract the value now? And that's really what we wanted to ensure, is that we have a partner that shares our view. And our view is quite simple, is that we should be aggressively pursuing that project. Where our skill is different to so many companies, as we've shown how many times in South Africa, is our ability to take something that is so diverse, so low grade, yet absolutely humongous, to upgrade that into a product that looks like standard in the market. And that's really what we do so well, because once you've upgraded it, it becomes extremely marketable, your product you've made. You can then in time take it forward and we'll take it all the way to metal if you need to. But all of our projects in South Africa, we've shown how quickly we can get into operation to produce something that is saleable. It brings cash flows early. It's light on capital. And then you have time to say whether you are going full to refining, or are you going to make cathode, or what are you going to do to it? Because Zambia is blessed with a lot of refining capacity within the area of this particular material. And therefore, one can question whether do you truly need to put yet more refining capacity down, or do you only need to upgrade that material to a point where it is marketable? And that's what that project offers us. And you're right, modular plants is something we've shown over and over the success of in South African business. Our South African operational team, you know, is renowned for it. They just simply, it's been perfected. It just rolled out a new one on each operation that we were offered back then. So that literally is what we believe we should be executing rapidly. And again, it's a standalone project. It's got no reliance on whether Rowan is running or whether Sable is refining. It might, if Sable is expanded even further, make use of that refining, but unlikely because of the distances between these projects. It's a different region, different province of Zambia, totally independent standalone project.
Yeah, well, this is the advantage, isn't it, of the three pillar copper strategy, having them separate. Something goes wrong in one of them, the other two will continue to process. But I guess for me, the thing is, there's a couple of things here. Obviously, you've got the copper price and the long-term copper pricing. You've got the fact that the majors are coming back to Zambia. And potentially, I mean, I know firsthand from a couple of them, I won't name names, that they're struggling with a local jurisdiction. So maybe you'd be able to help out there, whether in joint venture partnerships or similar. But then the other fact of the matter is that Zambia it has some very, very high targets for copper production. And in order to get that copper production, producing it up and running, they need to be very supportive. And I guess that's the question in terms of jurisdiction, because I think that's the key issue. How supportive is Zambia being with you guys? And that's my final question.
No, you're quite right. I mean, your statement is absolutely valid. It's completely undervalued by many. The lessons one learns for being on the ground and operational for nearly 4 years, 3.5 years, nearly 4 years in Zambia, it's invaluable. Understanding how to operate in the jurisdiction, how to operate within the mineral, legal, and community framework that is offered in that particular country. It is a tremendous advantage to have in Zambia. And yes, it took many lessons to get that position. And you're right, people are, you know, many majors on the outside looking in, you know, have realized challenges they faced in emerging markets, that to come in with that kind of knowledge offers a far softer landing than trying to do it all yourself and learn your own lessons all over again. And that is what Zambia is. Yes, you are right. Zambia, the president has been very outspoken on the targets they've set for copper. Copper is seen as a fundamental driver of the economy. And that makes the jurisdiction friendly towards mining, or supportive towards mining in the area, and which assists in getting things done. Classic example, you know, to their credit, the power crisis was severe on industry that was faced. But the reaction time for a country was relatively short to have it addressed, to bring in legislation to allow companies to address these challenges. And that gives you an example of how quickly and how important Zambia views mining as a pillar of the economy in the country.
Wonderful, Leon. I mean, I think the pressure is on you, you know, personally, and then on Jubilee as a company to deliver. I think we are pretty much at the low in the share price. If you look at compare the fundamental value of Zambia and the capital about to come into the company versus the market cap, I think anyone buying now will be pleasantly surprised in the next 6 to 12 months. But we'll keep chatting, and fingers crossed, it all goes well. And I do, like, I think the final thing for me to highlight is the fact that the copper strategy rests on three separate pillars. So you do not have, you know, the risk perception in the market is that the South African assets are being sold off, and then you're going to Zambia and copper. And if there's an issue, then there's a problem. That's not the case. If there's an issue affecting one part of a company, the other two parts of a company will be unaffected. I think that's kind of key to put across.
I think you've covered most areas. I think the scenario seems to be that we've gone from a sort of producer of chrome that we didn't own to a producer of copper that we own the full system. And this is going to create a lot more profitability, I think. There are risks in both jurisdictions. I think you'll agree, Leon, that South Africa isn't without risk.
No, absolutely, Kevin. I mean, you're quite right. When people say that you're selling a business that is de-risked for a business that is risked, yeah, maybe developing a company is higher risk than operating an existing company, but certainly neither are without risk.
Yeah, so I don't see that you have really gone up the risk scale. If anything, I think you've gone down the risk scale, having visited a lot of these places, and hopefully we're going to do the same again in October, November this year, that having the processing facilities, the mines themselves, and the ability then to sell on the copper itself, whether it's as a copper cathode or whether as a copper concentrate, I think you're in a very good position. And not only that, I think you're going to know a lot more over the next 1, 2, 3 years about Zambia and how it operates, even more than you do now, and to allow you to progress with other things as well. As you said, I don't think Monkana is going to be the only one. I don't think the processing of these waste dumps are going to be the only one, because they're all over Zambia. You know, they've made a mess of Zambia over a number of decades. In effect, you're going to be cleaning a lot of those up and making money at the same time. If the government doesn't help you progress you in that situation, I'd be a bit surprised, to be honest, because I think you're going to be one of the good guys in terms of helping them get to where they need to get to.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Kevin. You've summed that up quite nicely.
Okay, so we'll call it a day. Thank you, Leon, and I'm sure we'll speak to you again after the whole thing's been passed, and we can move forward. And we look forward later in the year to visiting again, and hopefully you can show us around some more progress that you've made.
Excellent. No, looking forward to it. Thank you, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.